the email gods or whoever decided to increase the spam filtering, the blacklisting, all of this stuff to make it actually so that email for a long time was its sole purpose was let's make sure my email gets to Alex Kremer. Now it's exactly the opposite. It's like, let's make sure my email doesn't get to Alex Kremer because it's probably spam or something he's not interested in or whatever. This is creating a fundamental problem because an entire generation of sellers doesn't talk on the phone.
Welcome to the Rising Leader Podcast, bringing forth the new wave of rising leadership and helping leaders find purpose, connection, and results. This is your host, founder of Alluviance, Alex Kremer. What is up, y'all? Welcome back to the Rising Leader Podcast. The show is bringing forth the new wave of rising leadership, helping people feel a greater sense of purpose, self-connection, connection with others, and oh, by the way, drive great frickin' results. I am excited to have, for the second time on the show, the amazing, incredibly good-looking Mr. Ooh. Mark Costello. So what's up, Mark?
Ooh, must be my new cut or something.
So Mark, quick background. I think many people probably know you, but you are the former SVP of Global Sales at Outreach. That was where I worked under you. We worked together for, I think, like 6 or something years. You're the former CRO at Catalyst. You are now the self-proclaimed Chief Fun Officer of the Costaglow family. You are also a host of the 30 Minutes to President's Club podcast. You are the king of LinkedIn selfies as well. I don't know what changed or what flipped, but like, I love it because it gives me a snapshot into your life, but I see your face everywhere these days, man. Dude,
so I was so against selfies and I have received so much ridicule from the company of the Costaglow family for my selfie usage on LinkedIn because my one daughter's on LinkedIn. And so she puts in the family chat all the time, look at dad, he's ridiculous. But I will say this, my engagement on LinkedIn because of the algorithm changes went down 40%. And I got all of that 40% by making one change, putting selfies on my post. It's stupid.
Know, I still remember when you gave me so much flack for posting a video on LinkedIn of me talking into the camera in a selfie mode.
Never do a walk and talk. Never.
What is bad about walk and talk versus posting a selfie of yourself in Italy?
Hey guys, it's just me. I'm just out in my neighborhood walking around, not really even paying attention. I'm going to look at the camera real quick. And, you know, like I just got a couple of thoughts I got to get off my chest. Dude, it's just not me. That ain't me.
We're going to keep this snippet here. And I guarantee there's going to be like, it's a year from now when you're going to just be posting selfie and walking photo over and over and over again.
Listen, if your listeners want me to do a walk and talk and they promise to do something with it, I'll do one, but only one.
I think many people beyond just my listeners want to hear a little walk and talk from you.
I doubt it, but let's. I'll save that one in the bag for when it goes down 40% again because it changed the algorithm.
There you go. So I was thinking, Mark, you know, I've learned a lot from you. You were my sales leader for many years. You were my sales leader when I first then became a sales leader. You gave me my first shot at it, and I've just learned an absolute ton from you. Being at Outreach and really revolutionizing how organizations go to market, the SDR, the AE world, you really were a big proponent of evolving it and changing it. When we went to Catalyst, you completely revolutionized the customer success world. You came out with the customer-led growth kind of mission statement of that company. And it's fun to hear you talk about just what's happening within go-to-market. I know you're working on something really special right now too. Because you just get so excited about it. And it's infectious. It's like, you can't help but feel your passion about it. So I wanted for this show, I want to just pick your brain on what the hell is happening in the go-to-market world. What's happening with these different types of roles? What's evolving? What are people looking for? And just really gain some wisdom from you.
Well, listen, let's kind of start with the macro. And I hope that my excitement and emotion with people isn't the reason why they subscribe to the ideas and stuff. I hope it's because it's based in plain language that is stated in super easy to understand way that resonates because it connects to like a personal experience or observation that someone else has. And then it, like my favorite thing to have done to me is it makes something that's commonsensical, like new and like, oh my God, I can't believe I never thought about that because it's so basic. I should have. I hope that that's the real reason why people listen to me and stuff, not because I get excited, though, you know, I can get excited. But here's the deal. If we start with the macro, this is the problem right now is every company, let's call it 10,000, have some kind of outreach, sales loft, mix, max, groove, whatever. All right. That's the first problem. The second problem is during COVID, everybody went to email because nobody could get a hold of anybody. And so many people were scared to call people's cell phones. And so all of a sudden, email was flooded. The email gods or whoever decided to increase the spam filtering, the blacklisting, all of this stuff to make it actually so that email for a long time was its sole purpose was let's make sure my email gets to Alex Kremer. Now it's exactly the opposite. It's like, let's make sure my email doesn't get to Alex Kremer because it's probably spam or something he's not interested in or whatever. This is creating a fundamental problem because an entire generation of sellers doesn't talk on the phone. My daughter, 21 years old, you know how hard it is for me to get her to talk on a phone? But she'll text me for like 2 hours straight. And they have this, I don't know, this complete role reversal. When I was in high school, I was on the phone for like 3 hours every night with my boys, my girlfriend, you know. My daughter hasn't been on 3 hours on the phone combined in her entire life. And so now the phone isn't really an option. They don't know how to do the phone. They don't know how to have a conversation like that because they're so rooted in text-based conversation. So they go to email. Email is now destroyed. What are you going to do? And I think we've created a situation where the main channel that business was created from is starting to become less and less productive. I just read a stat recently that in the last month, reply rates have dropped another 50%. 50%. And already we know that the average company was getting less than 2 or 3% response rates already. So now you're having to write 100 emails to get one response. And we know the response isn't like, yes, book me a meeting. It could be an objection, go away, whatever. So there's a million ways it could go. We're now looking at tenths of a percent of effectiveness in the email channel, which means you have to email 1,000 people. Well, guess what happens when you email 1,000 people? You get marked as spam. And so we're in a like catch 22 of I can't get the people. So I need to try more people, which makes it harder for me to get the people. And I don't want to, and I want to stay away from the one channel called the phone because I don't really use it. I don't really know it. And now, you know, everybody's kind of effed. And that's one of the current things that I see going on in the current GTM cycle. And the second thing is just, listen, I enjoyed my time at Catalyst, but what was most frustrating to me was a chief revenue officer's inexperience and honestly unwillingness to learn what the heck CS is and how to use it to generate either generate revenue or decide like I'm actually going to use this for value creation and I'm going to stop this craziness of somebody calls up with a ticket and my CSM spends 20 hours that week helping them resolve a ticket or hey, we have 18 meetings a month about what at-risk accounts are, and all we're doing is buzzing around at-risk accounts, and the other 90% of our customer portfolio is being ignored because of, you know, the bad kid that's in the principal's office because, you know, they're about to churn or whatever. Mm. And so those two things to me seem so broken. I will tell you this, the last probably dozen companies I've done consulting or advising for, their sales process ain't too bad, and their sales calls are not horrible. What's horrible though is the top of funnel production so that the AEs just are not getting enough pipeline. And so they're putting extra pressure on the deals that they have, which doesn't help you win. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is there's now revenue pressure on the company because they're churning and contracting so much, which puts even more pressure. So you see, like, we're just like doing this building negative feedback loop thing right now in GTM. And that's what's killing the average rep and killing many companies right now. Mm-hmm.
What I'm actually seeing from a lot of people, and it speaks to what you just said, there's this buildup happening. People are feeling more stress. I love that, hey, there's less pipeline, so there's more focus on the deals and there's more churn that's happening. And leaders are feeling anxious. That's causing the reps to feel anxious. Therefore, the reps are showing up to their prospects feeling anxious. Mm. And this thing is just kind of starting to fester and starting to get to the point of this thing is going to collapse soon. There's going to be just this crisis that's going to drop everything and a whole new world is about to enter in. And I want to kind of dive like a little bit deeper into that because you speak to a really interesting problem. And I think there's not many people who have the ability to solve the problem similar to you. So we've got many players within the go-to-market organization. You have a sales leader, you have a RevOps leader, you have a CS org, you have the AEs, you have the SDRs, solution consultants, enablement, right? All these different very important functions that are an amoeba that try to fit together to hopefully build pipeline and close pipeline and keep the revenue. So if you were leading a company or if you, you know, all the companies that you advise, which one of those roles right there do you feel like is up for the biggest renaissance, I'd call it, evolution?
I think that it's SDRs. I think SDRs are fairly nimble and flexible. And I think that AI is putting a ton of pressure on the value prop of a human SDR. And I believe that CSMs will be a close follow, but because of the reluctance and just ignorance is a strong word, but revenue leaders just don't know what to do with CS. And so I think that one would probably have the biggest impact, but I think it's a much tougher row to hoe than the SDR one. I think the SDR one's easy. And I can talk to you about some SDR structures that I've been toying around with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you do with an SDR? I remember when I was leading the SDR org at Catalyst and we were kept on looking at our reply rates going down, our meetings booked is going down, our pipeline is going down. We kept on trying to figure it out by 2Xing the number of cold calls that people were making. And sometimes it was working. Sometimes it was definitely not. Like, how do you actually solve that SDR problem?
Yeah. So I think that the evolution of the SDR is getting to a place where you organize it kind of like an NFL coaching staff. So you have your head coach, and then you have a defensive coordinator, an offensive coordinator, and a special teams coordinator. And it's the coordinator's job to get their part of the team to perform really, really well. But it's the head coach's job to put the overall strategy and the voice and the spirit and the energy and all that together and to make sure that the strategies meet the player's strengths. So if we look at it in that context, this is, I think, the SDR team of the future is four people only. Now, I'll make a caveat to that, which I'll point in a second, but I think it's only four people. One is the head coach or the director or VP or whatever of SDRs. That person's job is to coach, set the tone, and then provide good data to the team. And what I mean by good data is here is all the information you need about a set of accounts. Here is all the information you need to know about a set of contacts. And here is our hypothesis for this month or this week or this quarter of how we're going to test and attack that list of people with special ways, creative ways, growth hackerish ways of getting in touch with those people. That is the strategy. That is the overall team concept. That is the director of SDRs. If they can't provide the data and the coaching and the strategy, then they don't get the job. Now, let's talk about the coordinators. There should be a phone, email, and social coordinator. The phone coordinator's job is to just do dials with a parallel dialer. I think one person really great at making cold calls with good data can make 2,000 dials a day. I think that those 2,000 dials a day will correctly connect at around 8%. That gives you 160 connects. And a good person on the phone can convert 10 to 15 people or 10 to 15%. You're talking 15 to 25 meetings a day on the phone. If I was an SDR and young and with the skills I had on the phone, I would be like, give me that phone, give me that parallel dialer. I'll find my lazy boy, put on ESPN, I'll put on my headset, and I'll watch TV and make money all day long. That's what I'm talking about, right?
I want to ask you one quick question about that. What, just a side note, and then I want to get to the email. What do you think actually makes a good cold caller? What made you so great at be like, man, I'm going to be able to book those 20 calls a day?
Two things. The things that make you great at cold caller is one, you give a fuck about no. A lot of people might know this, but I was a telemarketer in college. I sold credit cards to people while they were eating dinner, like calling their homes. I had a 4% win rate. So I lost 96 calls out of 100. Now, there was some supercomputer in the back, and this was in like 1996. And I walked up to my beige IBM workstation with black and amber, you know, text. I hit F4 and I would hear a beep in my headset. And that would be somebody that just said hello. And I would not dial 100 times an hour. I would have 100 conversations an hour. I would say, hey, this is Mark Kosago from MBA America, 100 times an hour. So if most of those were no, that means every day I got 400 no's. Every week, 4-day work week, I got 1,600. I did that job for 4 months. That's what, 16 weeks? That's almost 100,000 no's in one summer. I give a fuck about a no. I've been told no so much, I don't give a shit about a no. All I know is no's mean I'm closer to my yes. All right. If I got 96 no's, I'm about to get a yes, right? So that's the one thing. And the second thing is, are you willing to actually have a conversation or do you want to pitch a meeting? And I have a really strong framework that helps people always push back to the meeting, but it doesn't make them scared to have a conversation. And what most cold callers are worried about is the call is going to go into a direction they can't handle. So they try to really stiffly control the call, and it might not get to an area that the person's interested in because they know one way to book the meeting, the rep does. And so you have to be just willing to like, be natural, be yourself, and have just a fucking human-to-human conversation rather than being a robo. Hi, Alex. This is Mark from Catalyst. Do you have 30 seconds for me to discuss why I've called today? Most people have their stupid phone voice. Yeah, you already hung up. For some, like, yo, Alex, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, real quick, you know, cold call. Just want to call it out. You got 30 seconds. I'm going to tell you real quickly why I'm called. Cool. All right. Yes. Like, that's how I'm talking.
It's that confidence. It's like, hey, I'm just being me. I'm not trying to be somebody else.
Yeah, and I don't care if you hang up. I don't care if you tell me no. I don't care if you cuss me out. I just don't care. You know, what I care about is like getting to the people that are willing to talk. Mm-hmm. So that's the phone coordinator. Email coordinator's job is to handle the email channel totally. If you warm up inboxes, if you use an email sequencer platform, there is no reason why you can't do the work of 30 or 40 SDRs as a singular person using the data that you're director gave you to help personalize and make the messaging awesome. Their job is to do that and to be so tuned in that they're giving weekly reports on the open rates, the reply rates, the positive reply rates, the meeting book rates of every single email that's happening. What is our email strategy that aligns to our overall strategy? How are we testing? How are we hypothesizing? How are we getting things better? How are we finding solutions? When is something going down? In most orgs I consult and advise in, and honestly, you know this from our time at Catalyst and Outreach a little bit, is it's hard to do that. Mm-hmm. But if the companies that do it have a distinct advantage, the reason I think it's hard to do that is because there's no person in charge of it. But when I'm the email coordinator, just like that's when I'm the offensive coordinator, my yards per pass play, I'm responsible for that. And then the social coordinator, and that person does things on the social channel. You know, we had an SDR do this at Catalyst. He booked twice as many meetings per week as the rest of the outbound team combined. Mm-hmm. And so all he would do is he had my LinkedIn credentials. He would go look at my posts, get the likes and the comments. He would look that against a target persona and target account list. And then he'd reach out to the people that were appropriate in DMs acting like me and book a meeting with the AEs. It was just so simple. And we started doing that more. And he actually started doing posts for our CEO because he was a great writer and had good thoughts. Of course, it all got approved, but he would do the posts and then take all of that and convert it over. So to me, this is that next level of specialization. We don't need one SDR to do to source accounts, to figure out how to enrich them, to do the research, to do the cold calls, to do the emails, to write the sequences, to do the social stuff. I think it's just kind of weird to say this, but I think it's just a lot. You need to learn how to do it all, but like, I think that it doesn't work for a business. I think for a business, you just need one person and you got one person's head on the chopping block for email conversion. That's the only thing that they think about. And I think with today's tooling, you could do that with four people and have the results of a 50-person team, no problem.
This episode is brought to you by Alluvience. Alluvience is a community helping sales professionals, leaders, and founders not just master the craft of influence, but do so by transforming the inner game. We do this through our in-person retreats. Our next one is going to be August 9th through the 11th in the beautiful Austin, Texas. And we got a whole host of additional ones coming in 2024 as well as in 2025. If you're interested, make sure you check us out at alluvience.co or check us out on Instagram at alluvience to hear more information. Can't wait to talk to you then. First off, Mark is the king of analogies. If anybody has yet to figure that out, it's incredible. Here's my question for you, because if we go the SDRL, I love that new, you know, way of just the specialization there, but let's continue now, go further along in the sales process. You have the account manager, account executive, could potentially be combined in with the CSM role. I remember when I was at Microsoft, I had a very tenured AE say, hey, stop being just an account executive and go into a specialist type of position where you're actually knowing the technology. So you're not needing a solutions consultant or engineer to actually support you within that. So the whole client facing realm, are you seeing how reps are engaging with clients or prospects different, how they actually move a customer through a deal cycle? Like, what's happening within that part of a GTM org?
With the AE side, honestly, I've seen the least amount of disruption and problems there. What I'm mostly seeing is people doing unnatural things that they wouldn't normally do because they have an unnatural amount of pressure because of the lack in pipeline and the proliferation of churn and contraction. Like I said, I'm working with a company right now that works in the e-com industry and they sell a video product. And I look through all of their numbers. Their AE org just needs one thing, more pipe. They convert, they have amazing win rate, amazing discovery to trial, trial to close, amazing ACV. Everything, their sales cycle is super fast. They just are lacking pipeline. And what happens is if that CEO hadn't have been intelligent enough to have somebody come in like me, do you know what he would have done? He would have put pressure on that AE org to perform even better when they're already so far above industry benchmarks. That is a world-class AE team. Feed them. And instead, what he probably would have done is been like, well, you know, the pipeline is what it is. It's hard to create pipeline. AEs, we need you to perform better. That would have caused them to go down. I'm 100% certain on it. There's no more juice in the squeeze there.
Mm-hmm. AEs are going to get burnt out and then it's all just cataclysmic downfall from there.
Every deal has to be won. You know, that's like going to being a baseball player and thinking every time I step up the plate, I got to get a hit. You know what you're going to do if you do that? You're going to strike out every time. It's too much pressure. It doesn't make any sense. And if you look at that in like that buyer's journey pyramid, 3% of your market is in a decision mode. 7% is in an evaluation. 7% is considering should they do evaluation or not. Let's call it 10 to 15% are like, I know I have a problem, but I'm not ready to do anything about it. And everybody else, like 75% of people, aren't even aware that they have a problem. And so most of our pipeline, unfortunately, is in that unaware and aware stage. And maybe inbound is in that consideration or evaluation stage, and that's about it. But that's a small part of the pipeline. So that means that we're now going to try to take somebody that's just unaware of their problem and wanting to talk about it to try to getting them into making a decision when they may not be ready. And then that's when you start to do unnatural stuff. They feel that normal, oh, this is just a sales guy trying to get me to do shit, because that's exactly what's happening. And then they bug out on you versus, yo, Alex, man, does it sound like you're quite ready for a decision? When do you want to meet again and talk through this? Like, what information can I give you to help you on your journey? Like, how can I be that guide that helps you? You know, we always used to talk about this. AE's job is to help somebody make a confident decision, not to win a deal. If you make somebody make a confident decision, one of three things happens. They either don't pick you, but it works out, in which case, high five. Great for them. They made the right decision. They don't make a decision, or they decide not to go with you and it doesn't work out. And guess who they come back to? The person that made them feel confident. Or they pick you. And if they pick you, great. And so, like, really, there's no lose in that situation on if you have a customer-centric perspective. If you have a me, my bank account, my quota, my company perspective, oh, well, one of those three isn't good for us, so we can't do that. Well, listen, that's trying to say like the next great baseball player is going to have an 800 batting average. It just ain't happening.
All right. So we talked about AEs there. And I do think that the pipeline is definitely the major issue right there. And I love the idea of just like make them realize if they're doing great, that they are doing great. I want to talk about two more types of personas here, and two of which you care a lot about. The first one is RevOps. You talk about how important the RevOps role at an organization is. And I feel like many times it's hard to actually utilize or not know how to utilize your RevOps leader or your RevOps partner effectively here. How much is that actually evolving with everything you've also spoken to?
I think that RevOps very soon will be the highest paid position in GTM. I think if I was building a new company or a new revenue org right now, my first hire would be an amazing RevOps person. And people are like, well, Mark, well, who's going to do the sales calls? That's the whole point, is I could create enough bandwidth for myself with a great RevOps person that I could do sales calls for a while until I got the stuff set up to do, to hire an AE. And that's exactly what happened to me at Outreach. At Outreach, I was the first, you know, employee. I did all the sales calls, but I used a guy named Manny Ortega, Manny O. And Manny O was my RevOps guy. And I would do demos from like 7 a.m. to 5 or 6 p.m. Then I would do the soccer games and practices and all that kind of crap. Then I'd come home and have dinner and we'd hang out for a little while. I'd put the wife and the kids to bed at 10. And you know what I did from 10 to 2 a.m.? I worked with Manny O on operations stuff. So it was super easy for me to do everything I needed to do when I was doing the demos. And I created my own bandwidth, right? We saw this at Catalyst. We hired Patrick Torrio. I think Patrick is one of the most under the radar, awesome RevOps people on the planet. He came in and immediately tuned this up, tuned that up, got this going. And now what was happening? We weren't hearing from reps. I can't do this. This sucks. We still had some issues because we were working through stuff, but he started knocking things out for us. And so RevOps to me is a force function. It is a force multiplier. It allows you to take the stuff that you have now and make it way more beneficial.
I don't think many people aspire to become a RevOps leader. I mean, a majority is like, let me get into sales and be an SDR, go the AE route. And I think just by you saying that, I'm assuming many people are like, huh, maybe I should check out this whole RevOps thing. What do you think it takes to be a great RevOps leader? Like, what's the qualities of a great person there?
You have to be a great project manager. You have to be super organized and you have to have like a process or operational way of thinking. Like, so for me, I classify myself as an operational sales leader. I think, and you know this, Alex, I think in steps, we'll do this, then do this, then do this, then do this, then do this.
So just so everybody knows, once you think you've finished a project, Mark just simply adds on top of that additional projects. It's a continuous little build process.
No process ever ends. It only just gets refined more. Yeah. So for me, it's easy to work with RevOps people because I hire people like that, that I can communicate with on that level. And then we look through the steps. And then when you do the steps, you see what system, what automation you can do to help with each step. And then that's how you put together like an operational plan for how to use tools and systems and processes inside your company. And that's what the RevOps role is. So if I was a rep and I love the sales game, but I didn't necessarily like chasing down customers or like the customer conversations I'm good at, but I don't really love them, but I like the strategy. I like the systems. I like coming up with this creative thing. That is a signal that you might be a better RevOps person than a seller. And it doesn't, and I think that RevOps with PLG motions, with strong inbound motions, they can be a revenue creator just as much as a rep is. So you can still stay close to revenue, but it's just a very different way of dealing with it.
You know, I'm assuming a RevOps leader is a very important player when it comes to how you're redesigning this SDR organization as well, because you're actually having to teach those people how to look at the data and what type of data to get. So they're an integral part of the entire system that you're building.
Totally, yeah. You know, I think that the RevOps person's job is to make sure that that director of sales development that is getting the data has the right data sources and that they're put in the right systems and all that. But it's the director of sales development's job to figure out what the strategy is. So like, are we going to use G2 reviews against our competitors that are listed as case studies on their website? Is that what we're doing this month? That's not RevOps jobs to figure out. They can help with that, but that's the SDR's job. Or this month, are we going to go, we're going to find every executive in our targeted account list that's been on a podcast and invite them to our podcast by mentioning what they talked about and how we thought that the conversation needed to continue. That's your director of sales office.
Those are two incredible ideas I just want to say right there.
Dude, I'm telling you, I'm in this world right now. I got like 200 of these things that crazy stuff people are doing. But once you hear it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's common sense. Why wouldn't I do that?
All right. So we've got the SDR work laid out. We've got the AE, AM, CS world for the most part laid out. Now you've got a valuable RevOps leader here. You know, the one that we haven't spoken to is whether you want to call the sales leader or just the leader of the entire thing and actually creating this whole thing. The show is obviously called the Rising Leader Podcast. So I do want to talk about, like, what are you actually seeing? Because what you're talking about is a very nuanced, complicated system with so many different types of data points. What is the leader or the sales leader really needing to do?
So this is going to feel like a little bit of a brown nose in the second part of my answer, but the first part of the answer is they need to understand that the world is always changing and their job is to find what's working now while looking for what's going to work in the future. That's ultimately like boil down the sales leader's job. And that could mean from a data perspective, it could mean from a strategy perspective, it could mean from a org, like how you do your organization, org building perspective. It could be from a culture perspective. And I think this is a second thing is I think that it's tough right now, especially in technology, the economy's hard. I think a huge role of a leader is getting that energy, that mindset, that like, hey, what is our purpose? As you always talk about, like, how are we a crew and what are we running at together? If you combine the, hey, what's working now, optimized, looking out into the future to make sure I'm ready for the next thing with the, my team loves me and trusts me and our energy is always get better, always learn more, always help each other out, have each other's backs, you know, be honest with each other, but still care about each other, enjoy each other. If you can get that coupled, those two things coupled, I think you are unstoppable. Mm.
Man, that was a great answer. That's probably my favorite answer that you've given up here.
Alluvians.co is having an emerging in 2 weeks.
Don't even need a commercial for this podcast. I think there's two qualities of the leader that actually support them doing that, or two key things that they're trying to get. People want meaning, meaning they actually, what they do freaking matters. Because if I'm doing all this stuff of figuring out the email response rate and all that sort of stuff, I have to know that what I'm actually doing and studying actually is making a difference in this world, right? It's working towards something there. Mm-hmm. So if you have meaning, and then second, you have community, right? Your crew, just like you spoke to, oh man, we're in this together. Oh, what you're doing and what I'm doing, they're all different parts, but we're all working towards this larger thing together. It's such a key part that I love that that is just the new role of the leader and everybody else has their specialty within that.
Yeah, I think the old leader's job was to crack the whip. The old leader's job was to say, follow my process and don't deviate and that'll be successful. The old leader's job was to say, listen, I need to hold you accountable, but I don't do anything positive with you. And those are like old ways of doing leadership that are much more centered on the company and the leader. And as we move into a generation of people that care less about their leader and their company and more about their personal growth, their impact on the world, what are they learning? If as a leader, you keep that kind of leader-centric perspective instead of your rep-centric perspective, I think you're going to lose the next generation. We're going to see a lot of sales leaders retire or not be in sales leadership anymore because they can't talk to this type of seller. And I'm just seeing more and more and more sellers that want not just that tactical skills, accountability, but they're like, help me with my inner game. Like you always say, help me with that inner game, man. Like I go to bed at night and I'm anxious about tomorrow. Help me, help my inner game be confident about tomorrow, not anxious about it. That is a superpower of the greatest new generation of leaders that's coming up.
Mm. Man, we could just
right. We just got into it now.
I'm excited now. I wish we could just do this like a 2-hour podcast.
You know what you should do, Alex? You should form a company that helps young leaders with their inner game and helping their team. Oh, wait, you already did that.
You know what? I think that you and I should just combine forces and then you take that, the go-to-market stuff. I'll take the culture stuff. Man,
third time's a charm, brother.
Well, brother, I appreciate your time as always, man. You just always bring the energy, you have a wisdom, and you're excited about what you do. Like you have a transmission that causes other people to be like, oh man, I'm excited about that now as well. So thank you for that, man. And for all the listeners who joined us, thank you as always. I know you have somebody who you're like, they got to hear this. So make sure that you send this along to them. And with that, Mark, any final words for those who are listening here?
Let's go.
I could have predicted that right there. Love y'all. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rising Leader Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you hit subscribe and send this along to anybody else who you think would gain value from listening to it. And lastly, as a reminder, this episode is sponsored by Alluvians. Alluvians is a community helping sales professionals, leaders, and founders not just master the craft of influence, but also do so by transforming the inner game. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you on the next one.